Welcome back to The Rush, everybody.
There you go.
Yeah.
Super stoked. He's here. Richard Krause, Booze and Reviews. How are you, Richard?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Doing excellent. This isn't on the plan for today, but someone wrote us that said, I would like Richard to give me a quick review of Squid Game before I commit to this program.
Oh, totally. Dive in with both feet. I watched the dubbed version. I heard you switched over to the subtitled version.
I did.
Either way, I think will work for you. Don't read anything now because there is a giant spoiler that'll ruin it for you. If you read too much online, jump in, let yourself get transported away by it. It's fantastic.
Yeah. Also, if you see LeBron James talk Squid Game, don't watch that.
Don't watch any of that stuff.
Too late. Too late for this
Ryan
guy.
Ryan played it for me. He's like, check this out. I'm like, oh, what did you do that for? I'm starting it tonight.
Figure I wasn't going to go down alone on this. Let's get to the booze portion of this. By the way, I missed you last week. I knew you came back last week, and then I was away. It's just, I'm glad we're all back together.
Now all the trains are on the same track.
Exactly.
I love it.
I am Thomas the Tank.
We're all ready for some death in the afternoon.
Yeah, what is death in the afternoon? What is this concoction?
Okay, this was invented by Ernest Hemingway, so you know it's a mind bender. And it was created for a celebrity recipe book, and it's very easy. You pour 1 ounce of absinthe into a champagne glass. You add iced champagne to that glass until it gets sort of a milkiness to it. And then the final instruction here, drink 3 to 5 of these very slowly.
Oh.
And so if you don't know what absinthe is, it's an anise flavored spirit, and it's said to contain something called grand wormwood, which they used to think would cause hallucinations. And about 100 years ago, it started to get banned everywhere because Van Gogh cut off his ear while drinking it and all that sort of thing. So one critic said, absinthe makes you crazy and criminal. It provokes epilepsy and tuberculosis and has killed thousands of French people. It makes a ferocious beast of a man, a martyr of a woman, and a degenerate of the infant. It disorganizes and ruins the family and menaces the future of the country. So, of course, it was one of Ernest Hemingway's favorite cocktails.
He's like, sign me up.
Wow. There is a safer alternative to it, though. If you wormwood absinthe is difficult to get, you can get it. There is a milder form of absinthe at the LCBO, but just try it with Pernod. Maybe work your way in slowly. Throw an ounce of Pernod in a glass, fill it up with champagne, and see what happens.
What's Pernod?
Pernod is like a liqueur that has a really rich kind of licorice-y sort of flavor. It's used very sparingly in a lot of cocktails because it's a very powerful taste.
It's always a good day for me, Richard, when a new music doc pops up. And I will be honest with you. 5:45 this morning, I had opened this on my Apple Plus, dove into the Velvet Underground doc. It is incredibly well done, and I'm only 20 minutes in.
Oh, it's fantastic. I put this on the list today for you because I knew you'd be digging it. The Velvet Underground were, as Brian Eno said, not that successful when they were releasing records. They only sold about 30,000 records. But of all those 30,000 records, everyone that bought one started a band. And that makes them, according to Brian Eno, more influential than the Beatles, more influential than the Rolling Stones. They influenced everyone from Patti Smith to David Bowie to David Byrne the list goes on and on and on. And if you're not familiar with them, this is a great primer in how they got together and the art scene in New York City that spawned them, and then why they were so influential. And the one thing about it that I love about this movie is that it is an absolute eyeful. The archival footage is so cool. The way it's presented in split screens and stuff. I mean, there's just, your eyeballs will dance while you watch this movie. And I love the Velvet Underground. They get a lot of airtime over here at the House of Krause. So I loved listening to the movie as well.
Yeah, and Richard makes such a great point too, especially with the Warhol exhibit that we have in Toronto, because there's so much archival footage of Andy Warhol in the factory that there's so much to draw from that it's as a music documentary, it's also an artistic experience. So maybe I should have watched it late on a Friday night instead of 5 o'clock in the morning.
You can pick it up later tonight.
That's the plan.
That's cool is that when the Velvet Underground used to play live, Andy Warhol had films and things that he would project over them while they played. And they'd have these really elaborate kind of light shows where polka dots were popping up and down off the screen and that sort of thing. And I think that the style of the movie kind of mimics that a little bit. So what you're doing while you watch the movie is have this look at this kind of multimedia feel that a performance by the Velvet Underground would have had as well. So it works on a couple of different levels.
Now, you might have unknowingly put this one in for me because I'm a fan of two historic horror movie franchises. Texas Chainsaw Massacre is one of them because I think Tobe Hooper is just an absolute genius, and there's a lot of reading people. If you want to do it, dive into how that movie was filmed, the original one. And Richard, I know you know all about it. Halloween is the other one. And of course, this offering is Halloween Kills.
Yeah, so here's the thing about Halloween and those movies is there was the original one in 1978, the one that made Jamie Lee Curtis a star. And, you know, she played Laurie Stroud, the survivor of the rampage that the relentless killer Michael Myers went on. And then there were 11 more movies after that. And there are reboots and returns and prequels and sequels to remakes and stuff. And it gets really confusing. Michael Myers has been killed a few times. Laurie Stroud's been killed a few times. Yeah. Ignore all those movies if you're going to watch this new movie, because what you have is a sequel to a movie that came out in 2018, which picked up 40 years after the original movie. So this is a direct sequel. The 2018 movie is a direct sequel to the 1978 film. The one that's out this weekend, Halloween Kills, playing in theaters, is the sequel to that movie and picks up about a minute and a half after the last movie ended. Michael Myers is trapped in a burning house. Laurie Stroud and her family have trapped him in there. They've lit the place on fire, and they think, finally, we're rid of this guy. Except it's a Halloween movie. It's Michael Myers. Of course they're not rid of this guy. He gets out, goes on another murderous rampage, and this time the entire town kind of bonds together on the 40th anniversary of his rampage to put it to an end, to finally snuff out Michael Myers. And there's a thing about really great horror movies, and what they do is comment on big social issues. They're not about the monster so much, or the kills, or the weapons, or whatever. Most great horror movies are about something else, a universal thing that we can all sort of appreciate. Mm-hmm. Thing is, I don't think Halloween Kills is a great horror movie. It wants to be about how fear divides us and anger keeps us apart and all that kind of stuff. But it mostly is just about squirting sound effects and things. The creepiest part of me watching this is I saw it in a theater on Wednesday night, and there was a guy dressed like Michael Myers, face mask, the whole thing, wandering. He had a seat, but he kept getting up and just wandered the theater the whole time.
Was that a plant?
Creepier and weirder than the movie. I don't know. Wow. But I kept PR one eye on the screen and one eye on him.
Wow. That's awesome. I don't know if it's possible, but one of the world's greatest composers, Andrew Lloyd Webber, we've got about 90 seconds, 60 seconds or so. What happened with him?
Okay, this is my favorite story. So you've seen the movie Cats. I don't know if you have or not. It's probably on some streaming service that
so
you have.
Bad.
He hated the film adaptation of Cats so much that he bought a therapy dog to take with him. Right? So he called the movie Cats is just off the scale wrong. There wasn't really any understanding of what I had in mind and what made the music work. So he's had the dog now for a year or so. So quite recently, he's going to fly to the U.S. And they said, well, you have to get this animal registered as a therapy pet. He said that I wrote off and said I needed him with me at all times because I'm emotionally damaged and I must have this therapy dog. The airline wrote back and said, can you prove that you really need him? I said, yes, just see what Hollywood did to my musical Cats. Then came the approval with a note that said, no doctor's note required.
Love it.
That's the greatest criticism of Cats ever.
That is the best. Richard Krause, host of CTV's Pop Life, News Talk 1010 contributor, and more importantly, booze and reviews every single day here, every single Friday here on The Rush. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, dudes. Talk to you soon.